Tony from England, who is staying in Portland.
Thank you.
So what we usually discuss a lot about here always comes back to this moment, because when we have quandaries, should we do this, should we do that, should we think in this way or that way, what is the reality at this very moment now?
Yeah, I think I can see that. I can see that even things like being in this moment is in and of itself a concept, like any other concept. It's a conceptual understanding. It's almost like a mental construct. And I think that ultimately we need to go beyond concepts. But equally, I think that we need them in order to. It's like the old adage of kids making a fire with two sticks, and ultimately the two sticks get burnt up as well. I think it's very, very important to have concepts, but I don't think you can talk about. I don't think you can talk about ultimate truth and ultimate realities in a conceptual way. I think we have to leave that to be experienced.
But at the moment of just experiencing hardness, there's a reality which experiences, which we call nama, and the hardness, the reality which is experienced, which we call rupa. Exactly. Yeah. So there's just that experiencing and that hardness experienced, and no self involved at all. So just a moment of experiencing and that reality which is experienced. And afterwards there's thinking all sorts of ideas about table and shape and form, but at that moment it's just touching and hardness which is touched.
Yeah.
No person in it, no table in it, no
not
thing in it. At that moment.
Yeah. For there to be, I probably contend that for there to be an experience of hardness, then maybe by proxy there needs to be, albeit an illusory sentience that experiences the hardness. So there's a duality there, there's the hardness and the experience of the hardness.
Yeah, but well, actually, I was asking about that because I, as I know, in in Tibetan Buddhism, you said that this is not really a concept of a table, but as I know, also the ultimate reality is what we call ultimate reality, like seeing, hearing, smelling, yes, consciousness, or any kind of rupas. They are also not real, isn't it?
It's not so much that it's not real, but it's empty of any inherent essence.
Mm-hmm.
There's an experience you can hear, but it's, again, going back to Buddha Dharma, it's dependent origination. It's not a sort of unsupported reality in and of itself. To hear something, there needs to be a mind that hears. Oh, sorry, there needs to be a mind that acknowledges the sound. So without a mind to experience the sound, then the sound wouldn't exist. So it's dependent, therefore. Yeah.
But if we assume there is a kind of reality that is understanding the panya, if there is some kind of understanding, so what of, in your mind, the panya can be can understand? What panya can understand and what sati can be aware of?
If you think in terms of the aggregates, there's a collection of experiences, a collection of things that go together to give the impression of a singularity. Yeah? Like a piece of music, maybe. Lots and lots of singular bits of music that go together to give the impression of one piece. Yeah? Maybe like that with the senses. That one experiences a sense awareness that gives the impression that there's somebody here that is hearing or seeing, but that because there's a dependent relationship between the two, that it's ultimately empty.
So can we say what the reality of the present moment is?
I'm not sure I understand the reality of the present moment.
So what is real at the present moment?
whatever it is that you're experiencing.
To my understanding, the Buddha taught the development of understanding of what arises at the present moment. So that is to say, the understanding of what is experiencing, the understanding of the object of that experiencing, if it has a characteristic, if it's not just a concept. And the development of the path is the development of that understanding. So there's no need to posit someone who experiences or someone who understands, because there are just, the whole point of his teaching was, there are just these Dhammas.
I quite agree with that, and that's the emptiness that I'm speaking about.
Right. So we don't need to, if we agree there's experiencing and we agree there are objects being experienced, then it's a question of the development of the awareness and understanding of those and any other Dhammas that are arising.
I think a lot of people might believe that with a very, very strong and sort of concentrated effort to try to identify the self, that it can reveal its absence and its emptiness.
But there is no self. So how can you
identify it? Well, we understand that intellectually. We can intellectualize about an
identity. The self is just a wrong idea. So there's no need to pursue a wrong idea. The problem is not that we have an idea of, that we think about self. The problem is there is no understanding of what really is occurring. Mm-hmm. And until there is understanding of mere Dhammas as elements arising and falling away, there has to be an idea of self.
Mm-hmm. I think
there's no other explanation for the present situation. The world is perceived as a world of people and things. And there is no proper understanding of momentary Dhammas that experience the world through different doorways.
I think that we can intellectually understand anatta. There's lots of books been written about it, lots of lectures, lots of academia.
Well, what do the suttas say about not-self?
I'm not that familiar with the suttas as I am with the Tibetan tradition.
Right. Well, let me throw something in for consideration. But when the Buddha spoke about not-self, he did so as a characteristic of Dhammas. We've been talking about Dhammas that arise, that experience an object, Dhammas that are the object that is experienced, such as visible object, sound, hardness, etc. In the teaching of the Buddha, not-self is one of the characteristics of those Dhammas. So the understanding of not-self involves the understanding of Dhammas.
Is there seeing right now?
Yes.
Is it self?
Yes.
Seeing arises and falls away at moment of hearing. They cannot be seen, hearing together. At this very moment of seeing, it cannot just arise by itself, but even just a moment of seeing is conditioned. For example, without the eye base, without the visible object, without that which can experience or see it, visible object or whatever appear now cannot appear at all, right? And I think that that's the meaning of no self who can do anything for seeing to arise. Because without the element which can experience, the world will not appear at all. But since there is another element which is different from that which cannot experience anything at all, so that element arises when it's conditioned to experience a reality which can be object of its experiencing. For example now, what is seen in the absolute reality? What is seen now at this moment? Can hardness be seen? Can softness be seen? No. Only that which can impinge on the eye base, which can condition moment of seeing to arise, to see it, and then they are gone instantly. So very rapidly, what is left is only the succession of the arising and falling away, so very rapidly that it conditions some idea about sign or marks of that which appear now as eyebrow or table and thing. Otherwise, there is no such idea without any absolute reality at all. So I think that the absolute reality, we don't have to name it or call it anything, but it's there for anyone who considers it to understand it as it is, as seeing is just a moment which visible object appears, and hearing is another moment which sound can appear. Without hearing, there is no sound appearing at all. And these are not self. They are just conditioned realities differently from time to time. So life consists of seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, and thinking, only these six areas. So whatever arises is conditioned. That's why it cannot be controlled, and no one is there to control or to make it up at all. And that is meant by reality or Dhamma, which in we can say that are two categories. One is that which arises, but it cannot experience anything at all. And the other one, whenever it arises, it has to experience, because its characteristic is experiencing whenever it arises. That's why there is seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching. They are all conditioned reality, arising and falling away. So how can there be any self or anyone in it at any moment?
I completely agree. Clearly, I think the only thing that I've heard is, and I see often, is that there's an aversion to accept the fact.
Is aversion a reality?
This is where I'm going. When there's a sense of awareness, that along with that sense of awareness comes a sense of self, comes a sense of, and you know, we agree that it's illusory and that it's empty, but there is an awareness that I see. And that sense of I see, or I hear, or I taste, or I feel, is the self, but not a sort of true, ultimately existing self. So the self does exist, but not in the way it appears. It appears to be me here, permanently experiencing these things.
Is thinking real?
In the moment of thought, yes.
Thinking thinks. Mm. If thinking doesn't think about self, can there be such idea of self?
But I think when you do have a thought, when you do think...
Can anyone control thinking?
There's a sense of self.
If there's no experiencing a physical object and so on, can there be thinking about this or that as I or things or self?
The two not go hand in hand, experience and the sense of self.
So there is not just seeing, there is thinking after seeing. And there's not just hearing, because there is thinking after hearing too. So thinking follows any experience through any doorway, and it can think differently. Some might think that there is no self, and some might think that there is self. Some might think that seeing is permanent, but some know from everything which happens in a day that nothing's permanent at all. Mm-hmm. Seeing just arises and sees, that's all. It cannot think. But after seeing, the memory of what is seen conditions the idea of something or someone all the time as permanent one. But if we come to understand each reality as it is, which one can be taken for self, because thinking also arises and falls away. While one is fast asleep, Does one know who one is? What name, how many friends, where one is? No idea at all. Because this is the function of realities from the first moment of life, which keeps on by conditions. In the day, there is seeing, and then there is hearing, and everything. But while one is fast asleep, where all of those things gone, never come back at all. So where is the self, the permanent one? Because everything is so short, it's conditioned, and it falls away unknowingly, even right now, while we're talking about seeing, seeing's gone, because it's hearing and thinking. So this will condition some understanding about life is not permanent, and what is life if it's only seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, and thinking. So they are not permanent, the whole life. And nobody can control or nobody can make anything up. That's why it's Dhamma. Everything is Dhamma. It does not belong to anyone. And it is no one at all. That can be proven and develop more and more understanding about whatever appears right now. Because we think that we see people and things, but in reality, it's only that which can see, only. And we call it visible object. Even we don't call it anything at all. It is seen, right? What is seen is short or far, is near or far. That which is seen now, is it near or far? No idea, because it's only that which is seen. But if there is a question about whether it's far or near, it's thinking, not seeing. So in the day, there's always thinking and thinking and thinking. Is thinking light or dark? Thinking itself. Sound is light or dark? Everything is in darkness. Only visible object is not dark. At moment of hearing, that which experiencing in darkness and sound appear also in darkness. But it seems like there is light all day, but actually it's not. So if one understands just one characteristic of a reality at a time, one will begin to see what is life and what we take for life. Without all these realities, there is no life at all.
And I think that what I mentioned a long time ago, I came across Tibetan Buddhism,
yeah.
And I understood the particular doctrine mm-hmm. of emptiness and the illusory nature of reality.
Yeah.
Like that was very, very big for me. It was very, uh-huh. very, lots of sort of things pulled away, and I could mm-hmm. see a lot more clearly. But it still left a sense of, I have this intellectual understanding that gets deeper and deeper and deeper the more I study, but still a sense of almost an accumulation of knowledge. But going nowhere with it.
Of so knowledge sort of what?
Knowledge of the illusory nature of my perception of reality, the illusory nature of
concept.
And I agree, it's mm-hmm. another concept, yeah. but it's a concept that took me closer to an mm-hmm. understanding of reality.
Without,
Yeah, absolutely. So the theoretical knowledge that in the midst of a discussion is very, very revealing and liberating. It does give you a sense of, wow, you know, I understand more now. But like the old Zen saying, it still goes dark and I still got to go to the shop for a loaf of bread and a pint of milk and nothing changes. So there's an expectation of an alleviation of suffering the more we understand reality. And that doesn't happen, right? But for me anyway, the more I understand, sometimes, in fact, to the point where I'd say the more I understand, the more my anxieties rise, because there's a dichotomy between understanding and an experience.
And is understanding you or yours?
The understanding is, yeah, it's my conventional self.
Actually, it's just a moment from hearing, considering, or reading about realities right now. No matter you read the Tibetan Buddhism or anything, if there is no understanding of whatever appears now, it's useless. Just think about that which does not appear, or think that one knows a lot about that which does not appear. But what about now, for example, seeing without the ideas that which can, that which the in the visible object can contact or impinge on. No way to know that there is visible object at all.
But that's my point, that I can't do that. I understand that. Mm-hmm. I can see that,
yeah.
And I can talk about it, but it's yeah. not happening.
With our conditions, nothing can arise. We come closer to what appears now, needs conditions for its arising. So no one can do anything at will to have this and that, because now seeing sees, it cannot hear, it cannot think, so the other moment after it is different. That's why life changes from moment to moment very rapidly without understanding any of them. I think that when one learns the teachings about reality, it's better to learn just one word at a time in order to really understand the suddenness of it. For example, like anatta, no self. Is it real? Because there is always the idea of I see, I hear, I think. But actually, what is the seeing? It's not I. It's only a moment which is conditioned by its proper condition, appropriate conditions. And hearing, see, just arise and falls away instantly. So no I at all in a day, in one's life. Learning to understand that it's only very temporarily life, and how short or how long, we don't know at all. But without understanding whatever appears in one's life, one lives with ignorance from birth to death, and one speak or talk about that which one doesn't know at all. No matter what word we use, we don't know it. Like world, what is a world? See, we just talk about the world. But in reality, what is it? If nothing arises at all, is there a world? No, impossible. But whenever just a reality, just one, arises like sound, that is a world. Because when there are all these realities, we take them all for a world. But actually, it's only just one reality arising and falling away all the time. So one can understand what it's meant by what we used to speak or talk about better, like life or world or different realities, kusla or akusla. It can be understood little by little. Theoretical knowledge can condition the direct understanding of whatever appears now. Otherwise, without the intellectual understanding, how can there be the understanding of what is seen in reality? Because people say, I see a bottle of water, something like that. But actually, that cannot be seen, but that can be object of thinking by memory. Only then.
It's just occurred to me that if we understand these things intellectually...
And, directly too.
Is that knowledge not also like so if I have an intellectual, maybe a really deep intellectual understanding of anatta, then when I'm thirsty, why would I drink?
For example, the word anatta, what is it? Is this moment anatta, and what is there in this moment? Otherwise we just talk about anatta with the idea that nothing cannot be taken for self or for permanent thing at all. But there must be whatever now appears, no matter we call it anatta or not, it's there. For example, seeing, we don't have to say seeing, but it sees. Sound, we don't have to call it sound, but it's there. It's heard, and it passes away, falls away instantly. From nothing to be something, and then nothing again, all the time.
It seems like, or sounds like, for you, the studying the Buddha's teachings has to do with some kind of transformation of experience, whereas what we're talking about is just understanding realities. So whether or not one's ever heard the Buddha's teachings, when one goes down the road to buy the shopping and collect the milk and bread, actually in reality there's just seeing and hearing and thinking about different concepts, likes and dislikes. So it's the same. So it's not, the purpose is not to have some different kind of experiences from normal, but just to understand what the realities are, what the moments of experiencing are now, what is experience now. So life goes on as normal, drinking water, doing one's errands, but just with more understanding. And when you mention the sense of self, actually, it's only at a moment of thinking. If there's no thinking about a sense of self, there is no self. So it's just an idea at those moments only. So again, whether or not we've ever heard of the Buddha's teachings, but moments of seeing, moments of hearing, there is no self. Seeing sees visible objects, hearing hears sound, regardless of whether we've heard about dharmas. So life carries on as normal. Realities are realities. It's just a question of whether there is ignorance or understanding now when those realities arise and fall away.
I think in terms of a sense of the necessity of a transformation, I think if you use the old metaphor of being in a dream, that you know we really think that this is, if we have a dream and it's, I don't know, it's a particularly pleasant dream, that in the dream there's a sense of self that experiences the pain and the suffering and so on. There is a sense of a necessity for a transformation, for a grounding out.
If the present apparent reality is a dream, then the question...
Like a dream.
Like a dream, yeah. Then the question is, what is the way for the that illusion to be resolved? And I think the question is, of course, what did the Buddha say? What's that? To my understanding, it's a momentary thing. So I think the analogy of the dream is a good one, because the world appears to us as a world of people and things. And I think what the Buddha taught is that the world is a momentary world of experiencing and of objects that are experienced. So it's a matter of seeing things as they really are. And that, of course, is what vipassana means, which I presume is a term familiar to Tibetan Buddhism as well. Vipassana is seeing clearly, and but I don't think we should expect a sudden transformation. But there can be the beginning of a transformation if there's a moment of awareness or understanding of, say, seeing. When I say a moment, it could be moments, but seeing is seen as only the experiencing of visible object and not me that's seeing. Or sound is experienced as a mere element of sound that is experienced through the ear door and not a person speaking. But this could be relatively weak and momentary. It's, and then the dream, the world is back to its regular dream state. Is it useful, do you think, to think of the transformation as beginning in that kind of sense, gradually and slowly at first?
Yeah, I think that's almost inevitable when you're introduced to the possibility that things do exist but not quite in the way they appear. That gradual transformation is inevitable. But I don't necessarily agree that a certain transformation is either not necessary or probably almost an inevitable part of that understanding, the deeper that understanding becomes.
What appears now can be understood better than that which cannot appear? Or can there be the understanding of that which does not appear now better? Can anyone understand that which does not appear? Or there can be the understanding of only that which is now appearing? Because nothing can appear besides seeing right now, or hearing right now, or thinking right now. At the moment when they arise, they appear as they are, not self at all. And in order to understand the meaning of anatta or not self, is the understanding of the arising and falling away in split seconds of all these realities, so one can have the firm understanding about what is not self. Not just nothing is not self or everything is not self. That's not right, because there must be just that or this which now appears is not self, because it arises by conditions and it falls away. So I think that whatever appears in life can be understood as the way it is. And what is a dream?
What is?
A dream.
A dream is an appearance to mind.
Now or last night?
That's another appearance to mind.
Yeah, because we call it a dream, so it must be different from this moment. Last night one dreamt about what? See, what appeared in that moment of dream is not now. And what is the difference between a dream and not a dream?
That's my point. That's pretty much where I'm coming from.
In a dream, it's not the actual seeing, not the actual appearing visible object, no sound or anything at all. It's only thinking about that by conditions. Who knows what one will dream about tonight or tomorrow? But there are conditions for that to arise. And we know that it's just a dream, because realities do not appear as it is now. That's why we call it a dream. But in another sense, since you cannot get anything from a dream at all, it's like no one can get anything of this moment as concrete or permanent thing. It's only object of experiencing, that's all. May I ask, do we have teeth right now?
I still got
one. Really? Even if that's not appear at all, you still think that you have it. See, so it's only thinking, not moment of when it appears as not teeth. But at moment of seeing, it's only that which can be seen. And at moment of touching, it's heard. It's only that. And then when you think about it, it's something.
I think everything that you're saying fits in perfectly with my understanding and my philosophies, if you like, and my worldview. I suppose the only question I would ask is that there's an intellectual, again I go back, that there's an intellectual
mm-hmm.
understanding.
Yeah.
I could go away, many of us could go away and speak to somebody who'd not come across this,
mm-hmm.
this type of thing before, and they'd be very, very impressed, and I'll run to the shop and buy some books on Buddha Dharma and so on. But I don't feel any different for the understanding of what we're talking about.
Feeling.
Yeah, my conventional self, how I appear.
But there must be a reality which feels, not you.
A reality other than me.
Yes, feeling is real.
But I can't have any experience of that. How can I experience something that is outside my experience?